The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to Kiefer and Curry. Closing out another Need to Know show. If you like socialism, well, no one likes socialism, but if you like talking about socialism, you perhaps have to check that
show
out.
If you haven't tuned in, here's a clue what it's about. Vladimir Putin, the great leader of a communist country, his personal worth, Tony, $125 billion. Pretty good work if you can get it to be a dictator.
That's pretty good. They use some of that money to trickle down just a little bit to some of the Russian people out there.
Well, so the whole system is a crock.
As he continues to reform the Soviet Union, that may be a good thing for him to go ahead and spread the wealth a little bit.
Well, it's in worse shape now than when it collapsed before. So
there's no doubt. Well, they're saying too that there was a reason why, and this is not what we're getting into today, but it's really interesting.
Because I
watch a lot of History Channel. I know you do too. But there's a reason why the Russians were so interested in going back to Chernobyl. Because they're actually finding a lot of different hot spots in and around Chernobyl right now that are saying that perhaps there's still some remnants of some type of fusion types of situations they can still utilize in the war with the Ukraine. Who knows? I don't know what's going on.
Yikes.
You just mentioned before we started the show about Mac McAnally, who, of course, wrote a lot of great songs and just did a wonderful job with the Jimmy Buffett Band, of course, the Coral Reefer Band. Jimmy Buffett has passed away. Sammy Hagar, go with me here. In August of 2022, said that he had a dream about Eddie Van Halen, who, by the way, do you believe Eddie Van Halen died 5 years ago? It's been five years ago.
You just don't think. I don't know.
It's hard to believe.
We're getting into a period of our lives where you're almost shocked every day.
It's a time continuum. I keep thinking to myself, am I going to have enough money to live out at this point? Yeah, because it's going by so stinking fast. I mean, it's crazy. Anyway, he said that Eddie Van Halen visited him back in 2022. He had a dream about him and told him how to write a new song. He said, I remembered I got up in the morning and wrote the song. I used the fucking lick that he showed me in the song. Nearly 3 years later, entitled Encore, Thank You, Good Night. That song was finally released a couple weeks ago with Joe Satriani, Michael Anthony, and Kenny Aronoff on the recording. During his show this past week, one David Lee Roth thought he might have a little fun with Sammy Hagar at his expense and said, there's this guy, one of my esteemed colleagues, he's a contemporary, he's got a great voice, he's got a great catalog. You all know Sammy Hagar, right? He's got a great voice, and Sammy allowed. He described to the media about 6 weeks ago that the ghost of Eddie Van Halen visited him and graced him with a song that he's memorized, and then he went home and recorded. It's on the internet. You can go listen to it. From there, things got a little less serious. He goes, I don't know what the odds are, but last night the ghost of Eddie Van Halen visited me at my fucking hotel room. I was watching the weather report, and in comes Eddie Van Halen. He was laughing. His fucking ghost was laughing. He said, what do you do now, David? He said, I gave Sammy a song. He said, but I want to let you know it's actually Iron Butterflies in a Gata De Vida backwards. Don't fucking tell him. Of course, some people laughed. He said he was in the middle of his performance of Dance the Night Away by saying he and Eddie Van Halen ghost then shared a ghost cigarette. He said, I hugged my brother Ed and said, man, do I miss you? He said, I miss you too, Dave. But he said, you know what? You should still go to hell. And David said, well, make sure you save me a seat. Of course, a lot of people thought that was really funny. I want one Kip Kiefer to give me your three ghosts that you would love to see come back to Earth for any particular reason. It could be for a question. It could be back for a night. It could be back for good. But I want you to, I know this is wide out there. And I have not, by the way, people are listening to the show. I have not given you any.
Nope.
Nope. I haven't given you any time to even think about this. This just came right off. I was just thinking about it, but I want you to get, because that's kind of the point. I want you to name me three people. You can go one at a time. I don't care how you do it. We can go back and forth because I've actually had a little more time to think about it in the last 30 minutes. But I want you to give me three different individuals you'd like to see come back from the dead for any particular reason. Tell me why I will go.
And come back from the dead to serve humanity now, or to just enhance my curiosity.
This is called the Kiefer and Curry Show. It's whatever you want. For example, I will say right now, I would love to see Mike Leach come back. just for one night.
Yeah.
Because the last time I interviewed him, he was really, really sick. I still have that interview. He had some pneumonia kind of thing going on. I don't think that was the reason he passed away, but I had him on my show every single week for 3 years. Even when we weren't doing college football, he was fantastic. He'd answer the phone during games. He was just a wonderful man.
That's unbelievable.
He was one of the guys.
Tell that story real quick. You guys were on the air on a Saturday night.
We were on a Saturday night doing the Curry and Claypo show. On 99.5. And, we just picked up the phone and Kiefer, we hadn't had another Kiefer and Curry show yet. And he would have been a constant guest on our show every single week.
But
Mike was always super nice, always called me back. Of all the coaches that I had numbers for, he was the one that always called me back. So it's a Saturday night. It's like 10:30, whatever. This is when he was still with the Cougars, Washington State. And I called him up and he answered the phone. He goes, "Hey, what's going on?" I said, "Hey, coach." I said, "We got a few minutes here. We're doing a Curry and Claypool show. You got a few minutes?" He goes, "Sure." And I could hear some stuff in the background. I said, "Where are you at?" He goes, "It's halftime." And I said, "Halftime?" He goes, "Yeah, we're playing Colorado tonight. We're up 10-7 and a half." I said, "Oh, shit." I'm good, coach. I'm sorry. He goes, "No." He goes, "I got a few minutes." He gave us a 5-minute interview in the middle of the Colorado Washington State halftime game. Yeah.
There is not one coach in the world who would have answered the phone.
Oh, I know, right?
And B said, "Oh, I got a couple minutes."
If
that doesn't tell the Mike Leach story, nothing does.
They won that game 24-17, by the way. So I took some
credit. How about that?
So he's one guy, just because when he passed away, I was just like, wow, that just blew me away because no one saw that coming. I mean, no one saw it coming. And I only believe that wherever he went, he was a winner. I'm not saying that he was going to turn Mississippi State into a national title thing. And I think he knew that he could not win a national title at Mississippi State, but he could win 9-10 games every year and he could be a spoiler for a lot. And he just loved calling football games. I mean, he taught classes out at Washington State. He taught class at Mississippi State. He loved the whole air raid offense. He created that. And he loved teaching that to young players. And I'll tell you something right now. Every single year, his quarterbacks were going to be up for Heisman every single year because he was going to throw the ball 70% of the time. And that's why his offense was so fun. So I miss him. I miss him greatly. And I would bring him back. I bring him back from the dead, at least for a night to go out and have, you know, some cocktails and maybe some dinner and just kind of catch up knowing that he's gone. But give me your first ghost.
Okay. I would like to conjure up, if possible, and if he's listening, anytime I will clear my schedule. I want Abraham Lincoln to come back and hang out with me.
You are not going to believe this. Look at this. I've got Abe Lincoln. I got Abe Lincoln on my top three. That? Abe Lincoln is one of my top three. Wow, I got goosebumps on my arms. That's amazing. That's incredible.
This is not rehearsed.
Wow. We've
never, you and I have never discussed Honest Abe.
That's crazy.
In all of our shows, it's the first time his name's ever come up. But he's just such a fascinating character in history. And arguably, if not for Abe Lincoln, how different could things look right now? We would be living probably in a separate country to the United States of America. We'd be still living in the Confederate States of America or whatever it would morph into, because Abraham Lincoln single-handedly preserved this union and kept it because the moves he made were so unorthodox, and he was so committed to the cause of this country being worth fighting for. I love the whole story, Tony, about probably the greatest speech ever made, the Gettysburg Address, which was only a 2.5-minute speech, reportedly. We don't know. Of course, there was no footage of it. All we had was the original draft, and people, he actually criticized it at the time, reporters, of course. Mm-hmm. So we think the media only sucks now. The media has always sucked. Some of them wrote, "That was a dishwater speech. He doesn't understand the enormity of the occasion." But for him to get up and do the Gettysburg Address and talk about the preservation of the Union and the sacrifice these guys made. But, the main question I want to ask him is, Abe, the war was over for not less than a week. You were the most controversial figure in the whole country. How can you go to the theater with no security? How could you let that happen? You were smarter than that. You let this disgruntled actor sneak up behind you in your box and shoot you in the back of the head.
And by the way, this disgruntled actor you talk about, this is the same as Tom Cruise walking in Madison Square Garden and shooting Donald Trump in the back of the head. That's how famous he was. Yeah.
And his brother Edwin Or that might have been his father. He had a really celebrated. They did Shakespearean plays mm-hmm. and stuff. These guys were like the most respected acting family in the country. Yep. This wasn't just some schmuck, had one drink too many. He engineered this whole plot. John Wilkes Booth sneaking into the box when he knew that the only guy assigned to even watch that staircase had gone next door to a bar during the intermission of the play. And so he knew that was that guy's routine every night because he worked there.
And despite the fact that Wilkes Booth, obviously his feelings were known about Abe Lincoln well before he shot him. They knew he hated him. And back then, I mean, he would say, I'll kill his ass if I can get my hands on a gun. But I mean, he was famous enough that he could have probably made his way into his box. Anyway, I'm just saying, I totally agree, man. But now you would have, but you'd say the same thing about when Donald Trump almost got knocked off a few months ago by the bullet hit the ear, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, I find Abe Lincoln's whole story fascinating. This is a guy who self-educated, came from the most humble circumstances you could possibly imagine, literally raised in a log cabin with a family that had no means whatsoever. His whole story of coming up, and there's so many great side stories from speeches and different entertaining things that he did talking to people. And the White House was a lot different back in this day, Tony. During a war, they would have a line of people out there every morning and pack like the lobby, and the president would like, okay, send in the next one. Mm-hmm. He would just sit down with any Tom, Dick, or Harry that showed up and hear his complaints or whatever. It just was an amazing period. And for Lincoln to see this country through the ultimate crisis, people don't understand the complete enormity of that conflict. And you hear about America being evil and racist. Well, there was a whole generation of young men who fought to keep the Union preserved and fought to make other men free. And you don't get enough of credit for this country understanding what they were committed to, and so many people actually giving their lives to make sure we preserve this Union Amen. That we all are so blessed to be in today.
Amen. I cannot believe that I have Abe Lincoln sitting here on my list, and you said Abe Lincoln because I was trying to think off the board a little bit and something a little different. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the most important man in U.S. history. You could certainly make an argument for George Washington, but Abe Lincoln, man. I mean, it says these people are like, oh, we're losing our democracy and the United States is ending as the blah, 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 blah. Dude, we've been through a lot worse than what we're going through right now. I got news for you. We just see it now because it's in our face every single day. We got social media all over the place. And imagine what social media would have been like after Abe Lincoln was shot. Right after what this country had just gone through. Oh my gosh. I mean, and just the media presence would have been horrible. I'm going to have to go celebrity here. I was thinking Matthew Perry. Friends is kind of my Sunday golfing thing now. Whenever I want to take a nap, I put Friends on. It's on WTBS every afternoon. It's kind of a go-to. It
goes all day.
No matter how many times I see it, I always watch it. And I always think it's super interesting that there were six of those people, that there just wasn't a lot more dirt that didn't come out about that staff. Somehow they all got paid the same amount of money. They were all seemed to be self-appreciative of each other and self-respectful. So I wanted to go there. And then I was trying to think to myself, and by the way, when you're talking about Abe Lincoln, right behind him, I was going to go Theodore Roosevelt just because I wanted to know what was it like to get shot in the chest and then deliver a speech.
What a beast.
Could you imagine? He's like, no, I got this. Shot him in the speech in the chest. What a beast. And he gets up and he delivers it while he's bleeding. But I'm going to go with Whitney Houston.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I'm a music person, and I've seen the Bobby Brown biography. It's more of an autobiography thing. It's something on a CNN show. It's like a 6-hour thing, and it's just him around the table with members of the New Edition and all the things he went. My Prerogative, what a bad boy he was, and how Whitney Houston really, he didn't make Whitney Houston the way Whitney Houston turned out. Whitney Houston made Whitney Houston the way she turned out.
Yes, she did.
She was a bad girl. or she was looking to be a bad girl. She was looking for an enabler, and Bobby just fell into her lap, and it was just a bomb ready to explode. I mean, she was the black powder. He was the, it just, and so no one could have seen that coming. Everyone thought, wow, maybe she's going to start writing, you know, some more dirtier, smuttier type of music or blah, 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 blah. Cause she was such an America sweetheart. You go back and listen to her music, of course, comes from the same lineage, as her aunt. You go back and look at some of the, just the clean, everybody wants to dance, and all of her music was just so clean. It was so pristine. It was so wonderful. And every time she came out with a song, you knew it was going to be a fantastic hit. And all of a sudden we just didn't see her anymore. Then we saw her sing a couple times and she looked like she weighed about 35 pounds. She just fell off. Dionne Warwick is who I was trying to think of, the lineage. Dionne Warwick is her aunt. Just that beautiful voice. One of the most beautiful singing voices. And of course,
There's never been a voice like that.
The greatest national anthem we've ever heard, Star Spangled Banner, unbelievable. But yeah, just before she slipped in the tub, I just love to sit down and go, what are you doing? I mean, what's going on? I mean, what a waste. It's your life. You do what you got to do. She was in a hotel, right? The Beverly Hills Hotel, I think she was.
Yeah.
It's just like, what are you thinking? It just, that career just fell off the earth like so quickly. And for her to go from this powerhouse that could sing anything, like a Lady Gaga sound, like a Mariah Carey sound, could hit any note, to the point where she couldn't even hold a song, couldn't even hold a note, just to fall apart that quickly, man. This is your brain on drugs, I guess. I'd just like to get further into what exactly happened. Was there any way to save her? I mean, when he got out of prison, she picked him up in a limousine.
Mm-hmm.
She jumps on top of him, wraps her legs around him, right? And has cocaine in the back of the limo. She's like, yeah, I knew you want to celebrate. He's like, baby doll, I've been straight now for like 180 days. I don't even want to get near this stuff. I mean, she's like, I know how much you want to get back. The first night they get together, they got trashed. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, that's how far gone she was. Just an unfortunate situation. But I had to bring back Whitney Houston, because she went from just being, remember The Bodyguard, man? She was smoking hot. Oh my gosh, smoking hot, beautiful.
Unbelievable movie. That movie was underappreciated. Storyline was stupid.
Yeah, it was.
But the complete and the most unlikely guy to connect with Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston.
What? I know, right? It did. Which says a lot about him as an actor, because I would not have even thought, if we were trying to find two people that were totally different, I could say Kevin Costner, not just because they were black and white, but because you just don't look at him in that role. But yeah, it was great. It's a good movie.
Well, let me tell you my quick story about Kevin, or about Whitney Houston. I used to, my friends and I, always on Friday nights in Atlanta, would go to a piano bar called Alto Belly's, and they have a fantastic piano player there. And they let certain people come up and sing songs, and they thought I was good enough at one point where I was actually getting to sing a couple of songs at Alto Belly's. Nice. Alto Belly's is located real close to a fabulous development in Atlanta called Country Club of the South. That's where Whitney and Bobby Brown lived.
Oh, wow.
It was less than 2 miles from the bar. So, you know, it was always, they always kind of had privacy, but you know, when you walked in, the kind of the buzz was in the house that Whitney and Bobby are here tonight. Well, one night, Friday night, we got there and it got to be where you don't even paid attention to that. weren't even conscious of it, but I did my couple of songs. I did Piano Man by Billy Joel, and I did Ballad of Billy the Kid by Billy Joel. Nice. Which was probably the song that people liked me singing the most, because it's kind of arousing, you know, from a town known as Wheeling, West Virginia. Anyway, the long and short of the story was, as I went back to the table, we were wrapping it up. All of a sudden, here comes this guy in this elaborate suit. It's Bobby Brown. He comes to the table and he says, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I really enjoyed your set.
Wow.
And I said, and I look up and there's Whitney Houston about 10 paces behind him. I think it's like August, Tony. She's got like a overcoat on. She's got a scarf around her head. Yeah. She's got big dark glasses in the restaurant. She's like standing there like, and like you just described, she was just small and she was like robotic almost. I mean, she showed no emotion, but he came over and was the classiest. I mean, just such a polite guy. Wow. And I've always got that image of her burned in my mind. That's probably a couple of years before her demise, but she was already on a very scary downward path at that time. And that image just is burned in my memory. So, but there's never, you know, she came from the kind of the gospel background too, came from a strict religious family. Yeah. She was just like the ultimate, I'm going to rebel kind of personality when she got so good. And the really awful part of her legacy is her daughter suffered the exact same fate of actually passing out in a bathtub because she was so drugged up, and she drowned in her own bathtub. So for mother and daughter, can you imagine, you know, it's bad enough that you leave your daughter with that terrible image, but then it just almost like sealed her fate to suffer the exact same demise. You can't make this stuff up.
No, you really can't. What a great story, though. Great story. Who's another ghost you like to see come back from the dead and visit one Kip Kiefer?
Well, this one just recently departed, but this is a guy I was actually privileged to spend some time with a couple of times, but I would love to show up probably next year or the year after in Cooperstown, New York, with my ghost friend Pete Rose in tow.
Yes.
I want to hang with Pete. I got a chance to do it a couple of times in my just by happenstance, pretty much. Pete Rose was just the ultimate guy's guy. Yep. Pete was a wise cracker, a smart ass. He didn't care who he called out, you know. I had one of the most enjoyable afternoons I could ever tell you. I was in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace Racing Sportsbook. It was a weekday afternoon of Wednesday or a Thursday. I don't remember what. I sit at my table by myself, handicapping my races and playing them. They were up on the big screen. All of a sudden, these guys come in. It's Pete and three lackeys. I don't know who these guys were. This was during the time where Pete had retired and been banned from baseball. He was living in Vegas. He was doing some sports radio there. He also had bought half interest in a memorabilia place that was in the Caesars Forum, where if you walk down the hall, they had a camera in a little back room and you could see if Pete was there that day. Yep. Because if you came in and bought any Pete Rose memorabilia, you got to go in the back room with Pete and he'd sign it for you and visit with you for a little while. Yep. So anyway, Pete and his friends come into Caesars. You know, he hears me rooting for a horse down the stretch. All of a sudden he walks over and sits down at my table. Goes, "Are you any good at this?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, I met you, Pete, years ago at the Derby Lane Greyhound Track in Florida. He was there for spring training. Our mutual friend Jay Black, who was the director of publicity, had Pete in his office when I stuck my head in the door. I came into town. I lived in Memphis at the time. I came in for the weekend, and I said, 'Let me introduce you to Pete Rose.' And that was the first time I actually met Pete. And we talked. You know, Pete would come every night during spring training and bet the dogs. Pete was a gambler." Fool, oh, of man, course. Loved it, yeah. He would bet on anything. But that, and I reminded him, I met him. He goes, I miss Jay. He was great. He always hooked me up at Derby Lane. Derby Lane was a fabulous Greyhound track. For many years, it was the showcase track in the country for dog racing. Anyway, I reminded him that I met him. So he started sitting at the table with me and we were going over races and everything for like about 2 hours.
Wow.
And then he would just kind of snap or whistle or, you know, call one of his guys over and he go, you know, "Who do we like here?" And I said, "We like the six." And he goes, "Go get me 500 on the six." And he would give the money to the guy and he'd go run off and make his bet. Pete didn't go to the window ever, but we had this big time there that day. And it was so cool.
That was great.
And a week later, I'm reading this. You and I have talked about how much we like to read the newspaper. I'm reading the Sunday paper and there's a little snippet in the top of what Pete Rose is not doing anything to help his cause of being reinstated. He was seen recently in the Racing Sports Book in Las Vegas with some unidentified characters.
That would be you.
visually betting on horse racing. And my friend Jim called me and said,
you were one of the unidentified characters.
That I said, awesome.
Yeah, I got that going for me. So I would really love for Pete Rose to be able to accompany me, the ghost of Pete Rose, for another day at the track. And more importantly, for a day where they're going to put him in the Hall of Fame, because right before his death, he made the HBO documentary and said, well, it's pretty clear now. I've got a lifetime ban and they're going to stick to that. So they'll put me in as soon as I die.
Yep.
And that's exactly what's on the fast track of happening. Pete Rose, one of the most fascinating characters. Tony, he could have fallen on his knees and apologized that I didn't mean it and I'm so sorry. That's just not how he was built,
no.
Tony.
No, and I would, if he had he done that, I wouldn't love Pete Rose as much as I do today. I love Pete Rose, the fact that he was a badass and that he was the way he was.
What a player.
And I told you that I had that amazing story when I ran into him up in Mason, Ohio, and he had pieces of paper on lines.
Oh, yeah. That's unbelievable. At the batting cage.
He's like number 18 on the left and would be able to hit it in a 95-mile-hour cage. It was unbelievable. He was fantastic. I'd have to say my last ghost, and I wasn't going to go here because I'm not going to get emotional about it, but if I'm being truthful, my mom suffered from Alzheimer's, and man, when she got dementia, man, it went off really fast. And about the time she started getting it really bad, I had just adopted my second son. And of course, my son Xavier, who you've seen on the show, he comes in once in a while. He's got special needs and he had brain damage and damage as a occipital lobe, and he's legally blind the whole nine yards. And so I was working through a lot of that stuff, and I had some things going on with my ex-wife with some depression. And so I just didn't get a chance to spend as much time with her the last few years of her life. I could have, my dad went to visit her every single day. And of course, every single day she'd go, where the hell have you been? He's like, I was just here yesterday. She didn't remember. She didn't remember anything. My dad would just see her. Nope. Every, I'm like, Dad, stop putting yourself through it, because she was kissing other men in the nursing home. And it was just a mess. I mean, you talk about, you know, when you're a child, you go into a nursing home and it's just freaky. You got people standing there motionless and they're iced over and they're drooling and they're making weird noises. And it's scary.
It's so awful.
It's scary as a youngster to go into that. Go to the Alzheimer's part and it's even worse. I mean, you guys got people, it's the walking dead. They're just walking around into each other, saying things, screaming things. And it's just, and so I never really got a chance. I wish I had had one day that I could have spent with my mom before I knew that she had Alzheimer's, because I never knew that. I mean, she started acting different. And my dad was like, yeah, I think she's getting dementia. And from that point on, it was already too far gone. I never really had a chance to look at her in there. I had the last time I had a conversation with her, she was getting really, really bitter and she was getting angry at a lot of people. And I said, don't be this grandma. I said, I got my two kids here. They want to see happy grandma. They don't want to see screaming grandma. They want to see, you know, just be nice, be friendly. And she just kind of looked at me like she couldn't understand what I was talking about. And at that point, I knew it was gone. So I'd have to bring her back at least for an hour or two. I wouldn't want her to come back any more than that. My dad, I think I've said everything I could say to him. They lived their lives. I wouldn't want to bring him back, because my dad would like, why are you bringing me back? I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. So I would not do that. But for my mom, just from a selfish standpoint, I'd bring her back for a few minutes just to let her know how I felt. So that'll be my last ghost. Who else do you have? Do you have another ghost?
Well, on that same line, and I hadn't thought about this initially, but you have prompted this. I lost my younger brother, Charles Carey Kiefer, in 2017. He basically died of alcoholism. He poisoned his liver to the point where there was nothing they could do for him. You know, he was 5.5 years younger than me. He was in my tracks my entire life. He followed me just about everywhere I went. His nickname became Junior. It was not after my dad. When he came to work at South and Greyhound Park, where I was the track announcer and director of publicity and later in upper management, my brother came to work there and everybody called him Kip Jr. Because he walked like me, talked like me. He wanted to be me. Wow. He ended up succeeding me in the announcer's booth. And, you know, you don't appreciate, I guess, the time you have, you know, with especially a little brother who, you know, looks up to you and mimics you and And he became his own man to a detrimental situation, because he always kind of had this fatalistic attitude of, you know, he really never could apply himself, but he got so he was kind of robbed of his life for lack of a better purpose, because when I was a little guy, a young kid growing up, my dad was excited. I was the first son. My dad took me to ball games, to the racetrack just about every Saturday. We've talked about that before. You know, my dad was like my idol. He was I connected with him on his love of sports, particularly football. He was a gigantic Washington Redskin fan. I've already sang today on my podcast. I can sing Hail to the Redskins if you'd like, but I'll spare the people a double dose today, but learned every word, went to games. You know, my dad was my idol at the time. And then when I was just getting ready to go into high school, my dad had a shameful affair with a bartender in downtown Atlanta. My parents' marriage dissolved. My brother at that time was, you know, like 5 or 6 years old, you know, or maybe 6 or 7. But my dad by that time had gotten a really good job and he was traveling all the time. My brother got cheated out of that period with my dad. Yeah. My brother, you know, I was the first son. I got to have all that. My brother never did. So by the time my brother and my dad connected, my brother was already late in his teenage years. And the thing they, you know, where I connected on sports and just the whole background of the family and everything else, my brother connected with my dad, who was just on the loose because his other relationship didn't work out. My dad was a player, Tony, till the day he passed away. He was chasing it, you know, all his entire life. And it was all about going out, you know, at 4 o'clock and happy hour and drinking and playing cards and raising hell and gambling. And my brother got into that last. So that's how he bonded with my dad. And it turned out to be the most self-destructive thing he could do, because I remember when he got terribly sick, and my mother, who was starting the and I identify what you said about your mom, because mine got Alzheimer's terribly. And it's just, there's nothing more just deflating, because there's nothing you can do. You can't reach them.
Yeah. And it's too late by the time you realize it.
Yeah. But she said to me, "I don't understand it. Your dad lived to be 84 and he drank all the time." I said, "Mom, you're not understanding this." My dad at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock had, you know, it's cocktail hour. He had 2 or 3 cocktails. Then he ate dinner, went to bed at 10:30 or 11 and was up for work the next morning. Mm-hmm. That's not how Junior lived. Yeah. Junior would line up drinks. One time he bragged to me, he said, "Come in, see my lineup." His starting lineup was a beer, a whiskey, a glass of wine, and a vodka. Lined up on the arm of his chair, he would drink one after the other. Oh. And he'd do it like all night till like 5 a.m. when he didn't fall asleep. He just, I'd find him in his chair, just out, you know? So he got into that pattern. And I, Tony, why didn't I take stronger action to get him help? People say, don't blame yourself. I blame myself. I remember he passed away in June of 2017. I was at the, I was getting ready to go out to Las Vegas for Christmas with my direct family. And I was out waiting for an Uber about 5:30 in the morning. And he came stumbling out after a night of drinking. And he said, "I wish you could stay for Christmas." I said, "Well, you know, I got to get out. You know, my sons and all my group is going to be out in Vegas." And my at that time, 52-year-old brother just burst into tears. And it was a help. It's a memory that haunts me, Tony. I want to turn back the clock, or I at least want him to come back. And so I can tell him how sorry I am that I didn't take more aggressive action, because I needed to step in. And, you know, everybody justifies it and says, "Well, you know, you can think you have that kind of influence and power." But I just think of that encounter with him where he's literally crying. And I saw him again after that. Wasn't the last time I saw him, because I was down there a couple times in the spring. But it was a desperate cry for help, and I didn't step up, and I'll always regret that. And I really sincerely want to tell him I'm sorry.
Well, and thank you for sharing that. You know that there's nothing you could have done. Having been recover myself for 6 years from both alcohol and drugs, I deal with it every single day. Right before this session, yeah, every Monday, I have meetings. I sponsor guys.
You go do something. Yeah,
and you can and just to kind of further the point, you feel like you probably could have done more, and we all feel like we could do more. At some point, you just can't. And I'll share just a real quick story with you. Who was a friend of mine? His name was Clay, who was coming to meetings 4 days a week. Was 52 years old, could play guitar like just unbelievable, was in great shape, was an intravenous drug user for years and years and years, was into the heroin thing. I became really good friends with him, was clean and sober for about three and a half years this time, which is a long period of time. And on May 15th at 7:26 in the morning, he writes me a text and says, "Hey, Tony, I had the strangest dream last night. I was at some kind of event. You were there as well as some other people. Suddenly the ground shook with an unimaginable, terrifying force such that we all knew there was only one thing it could be. We looked out the windows of the venue, and on the horizon, there was a wall of fire coming furiously and fast from some miles away. There was nothing we could do but wait for it. I have no idea what it means, but I couldn't keep it to myself. I'm still disturbed by it. Love you, brother. See you soon." He passed away the next day.
Oh my gosh.
From a drug overdose. And here's a guy that had 3.5 years of sobriety, decided to go out. He wrote that from San Francisco, was out in San Francisco to visit some friends. And would have never thought in a million years. And I still question myself to this day, because I remember giving him a hug a day before he left. I said, "Are you okay? You're good?" Three and a half years is a long time. I mean, that's like, you got it.
No kidding.
After 3.5 years, you got it. And so don't ever blame yourself for that. Don't ever do that, because the person who needs the saving has to want to save themselves first. And that's the most important part. And in most cases, they don't want to be saved. I know it's hard to believe. But I see it all the time where, you know, Lisa Mason, I don't know if you know, Lisa Mason did morning radio, here in town. She was Richard Dixon. She did morning radio. She was with Richard Dixon.
The Mason Dixon show.
Mason Dixon, though, yeah. I mean, several years ago, 2-3 years ago, just had gone through dialysis and was told, "Listen, you drink again, you're going to die. You're going to die if you drink again."
And they told my brother the same thing. Yeah.
Beautiful. She was a beautiful young lady. She's probably in her 40s. When I was younger, she was just smoking hot. She could go anywhere and the entire room would be just eyes on her. Was just a wonderful, beautiful person. Was fun to be around. Was very unassuming, very humble. And went out and drank, and it killed her at the age of 39. And I'm thinking to myself,
unbelievable.
I mean, so we'll never put that on you. God rest you.
My brother had the same warning. He was driving my car back from Tampa to come back to Birmingham. I'd actually gotten him employed out with the racetrack. Mm-hmm. He was calling races again. And all of a sudden he didn't show up, and we didn't hear from him, and we didn't know what happened to him. He was missing for 3 days. And finally a hospital in Montgomery called me and said, we think it's your brother. I don't know how they tracked me down. I guess he had some ID on. I guess he did not have ID. I don't know how they ended up figuring that out. I don't remember. But of course, hustled right down there. And my car was lost. He didn't have any memory of what happened. He just has some kind of blackout. It's miraculous at that time that he didn't, have an accident because the whole thing's just this mystery. My car turned up like a year later in an impound place, and it was completely trashed. Somebody pulled him out and knocked him on the head. We still don't know what happened, but they did at that time tell him that, he had like an Indian doctor who came in right before he was going to be discharged. He was in the hospital for like a week, and the guy came in, "No more drinking." He says, "Any more drinking, and next time you come here, you won't go home." And he had that you know, warning three years before this happened. And within 4 or 5 months of going down there, you know, I saw him walk out of his room with a beer in his hand. And I said, you got to be kidding me. He goes, oh, I'm just having a beer or two a day. Well, of course, Tony, it just that was the beginning. So, you know, what you say is so true that, you know, even, you know, maybe they don't want to stop. Maybe they're not capable of stopping.
No, they're not. Cunning, baffling, and dangerous. We always talk about cunning, baffling, and dangerous. And we always talk about the insanity of drinking. There's a great story in the Big Book, which it's right in front of me on the other side, about, you know, a guy who jaywalks and gets hit by a car. And the next day he jaywalks again. And this time he gets his leg taken off, and then he jaywalks again, and he jaywalks to the point where he's in a wheelchair and he's rolling out in the middle of the road. And you're like, you dumbass, what are you doing? It's insanity. That's the insanity of alcohol. It is one thing that just because you have willpower over 99% of the times in your life, it's the one thing we don't have willpower, and that is over the next drink, because one turns into 1,000. One's not enough, and 1,000 is too many. And it doesn't matter. It's the insanity of alcohol and the craving of alcohol. So God bless you and your family. Don't ever ever put that
the
on
final
yourself.
Note, and it'll be quick because I want to end it on a high note. Yeah. The highlight of Charles Kiefer's life. He was at a Tampa Bay Lightning game, and his program, the number in his program was called, he got to be the contestant on the ice in between the second and third period. They put this giant cover over the goal with a tiny groove, just big enough for the puck to fit through at the bottom. And you got one shot from center ice to win a brand new truck. Guess what?
Did he do it?
Charles Kiefer, he scored!
Did he really?
15,000. Wow. They've been doing the promotion for 2 years. He's the only guy who ever made the shot. And he did it with just the smooth, he didn't shoot it hard. I got a chance to do something similar in an Atlanta Flames game once, but I had to show off what a great shooter I was. So I was ripping these showing off my slap shot capability. He just slid the puck along the ice. It went right in the groove. He scored. He just calmly raised his stick and acknowledged the crowd.
Awesome.
I've got it on video. I got to show it to you sometime.
I'd love to see it. That's great.
Charles Kiefer, he scores at the Tampa Bay Lightning game and wins the truck.
Another highlight, big week. We got James Spann, who's starting his own weather channel. He's going to join us on the starting lineup. You never know, he's going to show up in the starting lineup. And of course, this Saturday is the first Saturday of college football. We are so happy it is college football week. So we're going to be all over. Make sure you check at ABC 33, 40, 10, 30, 11 o'clock for James Spann and all your college football. I can't believe it's finally here. If it just cools off just a little bit, that'd be nice. But my partner, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast.
It's going to be fun. We're going to have all kinds of new features on the show every Saturday. We're going to show off our handicapping expertise and get, we just signed a deal for a couple of happy. We're going to do a couple of happy hour parties every week.
Nice.
So if anybody out there listening wants to be on the starting lineup, we'll give you that information every week on our broadcast here and through all of our other social media outlets. But we're going to have a great year, Tony. It's going to be a blast.
Thank you, brother. Talk to you next week.
All right, bud.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.